Welcome to 5% Radio, where it's all about learning like no one else today so you can live like no one else tomorrow. Please be sure to share and subscribe. What is up and welcome back to another episode of the 5% Radio podcast. Today is episode number 58, and I want to talk to you about artificial limitations. I've talked about a lot of different things on the show, but one of the things that can really, really limit your success, and I don't care what that success is for you, what it looks like, how you define it, what the goals are, what the dream is, what you're facing as far as obstacles, where you want to go. None of that really matters. When it comes to this particular topic, it doesn't matter if you're trying to lose weight, make a lot of money, have a good relationship, or, you know, just flat out change the way that you see a specific area of your life. Artificial limitations, in other words, limiting beliefs, come from different seasons of our lives and how our brain works. And I talked about this on Mindset 101, Part 1 and 2, and Mindset 202 in those episodes. But one of the ways that this works is basically something happens in your life and your brain more or less gets trained to believe something it formerly did not believe. So a good example of this is when I was in high school, and I'm going to get into a bunch of different examples, actually true examples that have been documented with animals and different ways that they train animals to literally embed limiting beliefs into their minds so they can use them for specific purposes, animals and insects and things like that. But when I was probably, I don't know, I think I was about a sophomore, maybe a freshman in high school, so I would have been, you know, on the end of my 14th year, getting into like 15 and a half, one of the things that I was into was tumbling, heavily into tumbling. Got a lot of damage in my knees and ankles and shoulders and all kinds of other stuff, but I still love it. I still do it when I can. But one of the things that I was working on was double backflips, and I had worked on double backflips for months at the pool. They had a high dive. It's 13 feet tall, which is plenty of airtime to get that taken care of before you hit the water. And I had also done it off of the board that was about maybe 2 to 3 feet off the water. So I could do double backflips. That was proven. I knew how to do it. I could get the rotation down. I could jump high enough. I could tuck hard enough. I could do it every single time, and I could land feet first in the water without smacking my face or landing on my stomach or any of that good stuff. But I went to try this on a trampoline. I had never done it before, and my brain believed I can already do this, so therefore I'm just going to try it. So I tried the double backflip, and I'm going somewhere with this story, so stick with me. But I tried the double backflip, and what happened is I threw it wrong because I was used to diving boards where you go down and you have plenty of time. A trampoline, you get one good jump and you get your set, which is when you reach up to maximize your extension. So full extension of the ankles, knees, hips. So everything is fully extended. Picture someone jumping straight up like for a vertical. Everything's totally extended 100%. Ankles, knees, hips, everything. I'm reaching up as high as I can. If you do it that way, you'll get decent height. If you reach back, you'll start going back and rotating before you've actually finished going up. That was what I did. And I ended up trying a double backflip. Super excited at a party with some friends. We're all just having fun. And I'm like, yeah, I can totally do this. I was definitely trying to show off, but I'm like, I can do this. That's neither here nor there. I got this. I tried it, and what happened is I landed on my neck. I did one rotation, and I was about, 70% of the way through the second one, and I landed right on my neck because I was going around, but I was still tucked up in a ball. So landed right on the back of my neck, and my neck was jacked up for probably, at least a week, because when you fall from, 8 feet up or 6 feet up right on your neck at a high rate of speed spinning, it's not really too much fun. But from then on, I never tried a double backflip on a trampoline again, ever. Same thing with double front flips. I used to try them all the time. I got injured trying them, had to get knee surgery when I was 15, Cinco de Mayo of 2010, had to get knee surgery. And I ended up never throwing double front flips again on trampolines. I would do one and a halves where I landed on my stomach, or I would do a front flip and then open up and then tuck again and land on my back. But I would never try to land those again because in my brain, something bad happened when I tried it. And therefore my brain was trained and it learned. It's more caught than taught. My brain just picked up on, you know what? This isn't a good idea. We not only shouldn't we do this, we can't do this. So we're just not going to try. And there was this incredibly uncomfortable feeling every single time I thought about trying to do that because of what had happened that time. The same thing with a triple front flip at the pool. I was like, you know what? I can do doubles. I can do one and a half. It's like no one's business. I'm going to try a triple. And I ended up landing on my side from 13 feet up, had done two flips, was about 30% of the way into the second one, opened up, landed on my side, smacked my ear. Like my head was perfectly flat in the water and my ear was jacked up for probably 2 weeks. I got swimmer's ear. I couldn't go down in the water. Like it just was painful. And all these different things. Another example, and I'm getting into this, but last example of me personally, I almost drowned at one point. This was June of 2015. Long story, but anyway, I almost drowned. And I mean, like, legitimately, like, they came and got me in a boat. Like, there's no possible way I would have made it. I had a buddy that was helping me that was actually treading water with me on his knee, which is embarrassing because I was one of the top athletes at this CrossFit gym. I was extremely, extremely fit. I didn't know that I sucked at swimming because I never did it. Like, I just, yeah, I'm sure I'm good at this. I've been good at everything else that I've tried fitness-wise. This will be fine. It wasn't even like an arrogance thing. I just figured I had the belief that I could do it, and the belief was proven wrong. And after that, my body, I would panic, like almost hyperventilate anytime I put my head below the water for months and months and months. And I can distinctly remember going to, here in Ohio, the Mohican Lodge Resort with a group of friends. I can remember the friends. I can remember, you know, it was a weekend we went, and it was only like maybe 6 feet of water, maybe 5 feet of water. Like it was, I think it was only 5 feet because I was able to stand up. I didn't have a ton of room. I'm 5'3", but I was able to stand up in the water and I put my head underwater, literally just to swim under one of like the ropes, just those little things that section off, you know, this is a kid's play section. This is the deep end, whatever else. And I went under one of those ropes and just that split second of being under the water, I just mentally, I panicked and my physiology, just my body just wanted to start breathing. It was trying to breathe while it was underwater because it was freaking out because I had almost drowned not even a week before this happened or 2 weeks before this. So your brain learns limiting beliefs, and once it learns them, they can't be outworked. You cannot outwork a limitation that is stuck in your brain. You have to replace that limiting belief with something else. And there's a bunch of different examples of this that I want to go through. But the first one is that fleas, circus fleas, get trained. You've probably not been to a circus. If you have, then you might be a little bit older or you might have taken your kids there. But it's not really something people are like, oh, I got free tickets to the circus. Like, we should go. Like, they're kind of gross and there's, you know, carnies and everything else. And it's not really the best, like, that's what I'm going to do with my week. And I'm going to the circus, you know. But fleas, they used to have fleas in jars. They might still have them. But they put these fleas in jars and the fleas don't jump out of the jars. And so you pay $3 or whatever to come to this tent to see these quote-unquote trained fleas. Well, what happens is when these fleas are young, they stick them in the jar and they put the lid on. And you can hear these fleas over and over and over, ping, ping, ping. Picture them in a mason jar hitting the top of this jar over and over, just smashing their little free flea brains at the top of this jar over and over and over and over again against that metal lid. Eventually, the fleas learn, hey, if I jump this high, it hurts. So I'm just going to jump right below that. I'm just going to jump a little bit short of the lid. And then eventually what they can do is they can take the lid off and that flea will die in the jar, even though it has the capability to leap out of that jar. They can jump incredibly high. I've heard everything from, oh, they can jump 6 inches high and 13 inches long and all the way to like, oh, they can jump 3 feet high. I can attest to the fact that they jump higher than 13 inches and higher than 6 inches. Simply because we actually ended up having fleas in our house when I was younger. We are very clean people. My parents cleaned all the time, got the carpets cleaned, vacuumed all the time. We ended up having cats in the basement, and we didn't realize that our cats had fleas because they were all indoor cats. They had flea collars, treatments, all that stuff. And anyway, we ended up getting fleas, and you'd be sitting in the living room, and you would leave your drink there for a second and come back, and there's a flea in your drink, and you could watch them jump across the carpet. It was a very short-lived season. We got rid of them, got them exterminated, all that good stuff. Cleaned the carpets afterwards, never saw them again. I mean, I've seen fleas since, but never in the house. But that was all taken care of, but you could see them. They can jump incredibly far, but yet if you put them in these jars and you train them, now they will die in that jar. They will never jump higher because they learned if I push my boundaries, if I push my limitations, if I try to jump higher than these other guys next to me, they're not jumping out of the jar, but if I try to jump, I hit the lid. And man, that's why they're not doing it. It's probably bad for me to do it, and they will stop doing it. They are trained to not jump anywhere near their potential just because of that lid. Just because they hit it a couple times, they had some painful experiences over and over and over and over again. And even though they weren't intentionally trying to learn a limitation, they weren't trying to embed something into their brain that says, you can go this far and no further, even though that wasn't the situation for them, that was the situation for the person training them, and they went through a circumstance that taught them something, and now they have a limiting belief or more or less a governor. Just like the idea of a governor in a car that says, you know what, the engine might be able to go 160, but we're going to cap it out at 110. I can remember my parents had a Malibu when I was in high school. I was about 16 years old, and I found that the governor only let it go 105. And I was driving down the road one day with my mom, and she's like, oh, this will go 140, blah, blah, blah. The speedometer says this and that. And I looked over at her. I loved to mess with my mom when I was younger. And I still do. I'll be 30 this year. I still love to mess with her. She's great. But I told her, I'm like, no, mom, don't worry. This thing only goes 105. I checked. Like, there was an artificial limit limitation on that car. The car could go 35 miles an hour faster. It could have gone 140. And when it got to 105, it was still climbing. Like, no problem. It definitely could have gone 110, 115, 120, 125, 130, 135, 140. Like, it was cruising, man. But it was governed. It was limited artificially by something inside the engine that had been placed there that wasn't actually part of the engine, but it had been placed there to stop it from going any further. Same thing with these fleas. Next example would be circus elephants. I know I'm on a circus kick here, but stick with me. Circus elephants. See, when elephants are young and they're being trained to more or less be in captivity, they take the elephant and they drive a super long, I mean, like many, many, many feet, 2 or 3 feet down on the ground, this large metal, like a tent stake. They drive one of those down on the ground, 2 or 3 feet, and they attach it to this chain. And that baby elephant, that young elephant, even though it's extremely strong at that point, it cannot pull that stake out of the ground, and it will pull and pull and pull until its skin is raw, until it's bleeding. It will jerk against that chain, trying to outwork that limiting belief, so to speak. It will do it over and over and over and over and over. And then it learns, man, if I pull so hard, it hurts. If I push beyond this boundary, it hurts. It hurts my leg. And they have that memory the rest of their life. And what they do is, after they're trained to a certain point where they no longer pull, you'll see these elephants in a circus. If you go in a circus tent, you'll see them with a wooden stake in the ground. Okay? A wooden stake in the ground and a piece of rope that even you could pull your leg out of. Like, even you could rip that thing out of the ground. But the elephants know, as soon as I begin to feel a tug, I've reached my limit. I can't go any further. There's an artificial limitation that's been set up for me. They don't know it's artificial. They don't know it's a limitation. They just know I can only go this far. And you'll see these elephants swaying back and forth. They'll take a step forward and they'll take a step back. They'll take a step sideways and they'll take a step back. They'll take a step backwards. They'll take a step forward. As soon as they feel that tug, oh, another step backward. As soon as they feel that tug, oh, step back to the other side. Now, that elephant could literally rip down a tree. Like, if you put a harness on them and put them next to a tree, depending on the size, it could rip down the tree. It could do a lot of different things. It could pull a car that's probably has, you know, the tires locked up. They're extremely, extremely, extremely strong. And yet this small rope and this wooden stake that's not even that deep in the ground has limited them, because they were trained from a young age that, hey, when you try to push the boundary, it hurts and you'll never be able to break through this limitation. And they have been trained. Monkeys are another great example. I've heard spider monkeys and all kinds of different monkeys are caught this way. They will take, a spider monkey is very small. They'll take a jar that's large enough that the little monkey cannot lift it on its own, and they'll put something in the jar, peanuts or a banana or something that the monkey cannot pull out of the jar if its fist is closed. So the monkey can stick its hand in the jar, but it can't make a fist and then pull its fist out with the things that it's holding in its fist. But the monkey will go from freedom, where it's able to do what it wants, when it wants, where it wants, with, I don't know if you would say who, since it's other monkeys, but it's able to have total freedom. And this monkey sees this jar, something that it wants, and it reaches into the jar and grabs a hold of this thing, and it won't let it go. If the monkey would literally just let it go, then it could pull its arm out. It would be totally free. It could walk away. It would never get captured. But the way they get captured is they stick their hand in, they make a fist, and once they've made a fist, their hand is now bigger. It can't squeeze out, and they'll fight and fight and fight. And since they're too small to grab that jar and take it with them, eventually someone just walks up, picks them and the jar up while the monkey is still clinging to this thing. The real thing that's limiting the monkey is the fact that it won't let go of what it's holding on to. It's not the jar. It's not the situation. It's not anything real that's happened. It's not the monkey's strength, its inability to lift the jar. None of that stuff really matters. All the monkey has to do is open its hand, let go of whatever's in its palm that's preventing it from slipping its hand out, and it would be free. Another example with monkeys is they'll take termite hills, which are extremely, extremely hard. They will drill into these termite hills, and they'll put peanuts, and they'll catch full-size monkeys. These monkeys will go over and grab it, and that monkey will spend 30 minutes just spazzing out, screaming, you know, just losing its mind because it can't get its hand out. And someone will walk up with a cage, put the monkey in the cage, and then somehow get them to open their hand, and boom, they caught the monkey. All the monkey had to do was let go of what it was holding on to, and it would have been able to get out. Another example of pike, and this is the last one. There was an experiment done with a fish tank. There were pike and minnows. And they put a glass halfway through this tank. Now, pike love to eat minnows. I almost said pikes, but that's not correct grammatically. Pike love to eat minnows. So there's these minnows in half the tank. There's a clear piece of glass, and there's a pike in the other half, large enough and strong enough to go kill and eat those minnows. But they did this experiment for 7 days. For the first 2 to 3 days, that pike kept slamming up against the glass over and over and over and over and over again because it could see the minnows on the other side. It could see them. They were right there. It just wanted to eat. It was hungry. It would do it over and over and over again. And then 3 days in, it stopped. Well, they removed the glass on day 3 or day 4, and the pike had already quit trying. It had already learned, if I try to go after the minnow, I get hurt. If I try to go over there and eat one of them, I'm hungry. I want it. I've got a dream. I've got the desire. I've got the goal. I need that. I need what's on the other side of this barrier. But if I try again, it hurt 3 days in a row. I did it over and over and over. I'm bleeding. I'm not going to do this again. And at the end of the experiment, day 7, by the way, that pike starved to death with minnows swimming all around, surrounded by the very thing that he needs to eat to survive. And he died because his belief was that I can try to get him, but every time I do, it hurts, and I can never get one. So eventually, he just quit trying. It was the last 2 days of the experiment, days 6 and 7. So it wasn't just the last day that he starved to death and died. It was days 6 and 7 both as he's starving to death. 2 days, 48 hours of being surrounded by the very food that he needs. This would be equivalent to you laying on the floor of a buffet. I was going to say a name of a restaurant, then I'm like, no, that's a terrible buffet that people get food poisoning at. But think about a gourmet buffet, just high quality organic foods, like everything you would need to go from, I've been starving for 5 days, which honestly isn't that bad. I've gone 5 days without food and you're not starving, like you'll live. But 5 days in and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so hungry. If I could just eat, and they put you in a buffet and for 2 days, you're surrounded by food, people walking by with their plates. And they're like, yeah, it's literally, if you'll just stand up, you could almost reach it from here. Actually, you could probably reach it on your hands and knees, and you starve to death. Be like starving to death in a grocery store. Everything you need is right there. But the belief is, no, I can't get to it. So let me ask you this. What lid have you been hitting your head against over and over and over that has taught you, I go this far and no further? I'm not the kind of person that does that. People in my family, we don't go to those places. We don't do those things. Well, I don't have a degree, and I've mentioned all this stuff before, but it's so important because I've realized that one of the reasons that I'm stuck, one of the reasons that I'm stuck getting to one of my major goals is that I have a limiting belief in my head. I have a picture of myself that is not worthy of going to the next level that I want to go to. And I know this because I can do the work that it takes to get there. Over and over and over, I've proven that I can do the work. But I still have things that come up. I still have things that come up and I sabotage myself. And I heard an example today of, if you've ever seen the show, The Addams Family, it's an old show. I'm not talking about the movie or, you know, Wednesday or any of the things they've remade, any of the TV shows, like the original Addams Family. Gomez, I believe it was Uncle Gomez, used to love playing with trains. And he would love playing with these trains. And every single time the train got close to crossing the bridge to go to the other side, it's this little toy train set that he had set up. Every time it gets close to crossing the bridge, he's holding a little detonator and he blows up the bridge and derails his own train, like on purpose. He's just like so joyous about it. Like, look what I did. I derailed the train again. And so many of us in our lives are the same exact way. There's areas right now that you have been trained like those fleas hitting the jar, that you've been trained like those circus elephants going back and forth. Oh, a little bit of growth and then I go back. Man, we save a little bit of money and then we spend it all. I get promotions in my job, and then I end up getting fired every time. I have great relationships, and then I sabotage it somehow. I start moving forward. I start losing weight. I start hitting my goals. I start feeling healthy. I go to the gym over and over and over. I'm putting good information in my brain. I'm binging positive stuff like this podcast and other personal growth audios, and I'm reading, and then up Netflix for a week every single day. I'm starting my own business, and then now I'm going to quit and go back to a job. It got hard. There's all these limitations. And as the monkey holds on to something, and that's the only thing that captures it. Same thing's true with us. The only thing holding you back, and this sounds corny, and this sounds like it could be a, you know, motivational speech, and we could set some music to it, and I could scream really loud, and we could have some famous athletes throw quotes in there and get all fired up, and you could be like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then you go right back into the next day, and the lid's still there. The rope is still around your ankle. You're still holding on to the same thing. You still have the piece of glass between you and the food that you need. You'll starve to death because of your limiting beliefs. You've got to learn that you cannot work them. You can't think positively enough that they'll just go away. You have to replace them. You have to change the way you see yourself as not a person who's going to a certain place, but as the type of person who is accomplished that. Not I'm going to accomplish. You have to come not to the goal, not I'm going to be a $100,000 a year earner, I'm going to be a $250,000 a year. I'm going to be a top five, top 1% income earner in the country, in my specific industry, in my business, in my whatever. You've got to work backwards and say, okay, this person, how do they walk, talk, dress? What do they eat? What do they read? Who do they mentor with? How do they think? Who do they hang around? What are the actions they do? What time does this person wake up? All of that stuff. Who are they? And then become that person. Act your way into it. It's not fake it till you make it. It's faith it till you make it. It's literally acting like you are already that person. Taking on faith that I am on my way there and I'm going to act like I am that person until I become that person. And it will happen. I've seen it over and over and over again. I'll tell you one story as I'm closing. At one point, my wife and I started the marketing agency. I say my wife and I, she wasn't really directly involved with me, but everything we do, we're a team. So if I'm doing something, she's doing it and vice versa. We're very supportive of one another. It's not like, you know, she has this role in the family and I have this role and we never help each other. Like, it's not like that at all. I help out her as much as I can and she helps me out as much as she can. But there are definitely things that only I do and things that only she does just because there are strengths. So there's no reason for me to try to be as good at her as, you know, for example, being a mom, like I can't do that. We can say gender equality and all this stuff, but like I can never do as good of a job as she does in certain areas. And she can never do as good of a job as I do in certain areas just because we're not innately built with those roles. So we do whatever we can to complement each other. And we work as a team and we're yoked up together. We're plow horses pulling in the same direction. We're never pulling apart. She's never doing less and I'm doing more. Like we're always yoked up and working together. But there was a season of our business where we had just started the marketing agency and I wrote every single day. Every single day, I would spend probably 10 minutes doing this exercise right when I woke up and then right when I went to bed. I make $10,000 a month. I make $10,000 a month over and over and over. And I would literally just fill a page with this. I make $10,000 a month, comma. I make $10,000 a month, comma. I make $10,000 a month. And very, very, very quickly, our income went from like, you know, $4,800 a month just working our jobs up to $6,500, up to $7,500. We got to a month that was like $9,700, I think, $9,700 or $9,800 between our jobs and our agency. This is, we were already out of debt. We had no mortgage. We had no student loans. We had no cars, no credit card payments, nothing. And we were living on like $1,900 a month. So there was a month that we saved like, paid tithes and saved like $6,000 or $7,000. And it was amazing how quickly we went from making less than $5,000 a month to like $9,700 or $9,800, strictly because I began to see myself as the kind of person that makes that sort of money. And I focused on it every single day. Now, we did some things to sabotage ourselves later on, and our income went back down to $6,500 a month, and then at one point went from $6,500 to $300 in the same exact month, which was awesome. And that was part of a process that formed some limiting beliefs, and we went through a serious season of financial struggle. I'll talk about this more later, but we went through a really hard season, and I went back and looked, and I'm like, oh, I had changed my identity from a person that was making less than $5,000 to a person that now makes $10,000, which, by the way, top line revenue, that's $120,000 a year. If you're wondering, okay, what is that? So it's over six figures. So I went from a person that makes $5,000 a month. I acted like, talked like, walked like, slept like, read all. I acted like a person that made about $60,000 a year, and I changed who I was, and I started acting as if I was the person that made $10,000 a year. Or $10,000 a month, excuse me, and we hit it so fast, $9,800, and then we started doing some things where I blew up my own bridge, and we went back down because I had limiting beliefs. I replaced that belief, and then that belief got the best of me, and just as the train flees, the circus elephants, the monkeys holding on to stuff, and the pike, I went right back to what I thought my limitations were, and that led us into a season of just all kinds of wonderful stuff that I'll share later on in a different episode, but understand, your artificial limitations are what holds you back, and they are just that. They are artificial. They can be replaced. They're not real limitations. Your potential is beyond anything that you can imagine if you will just learn to apply yourself and not go to the goal, not fake it, but faith it and come from the goal and act as if you were that person already until you become that person. As always, guys, I hope this helped, and I will talk to you in episode number 59.